Well, the days, they just keep rolling along, don't they? All the way to the 25th day of March. Down to 11 games remaining on the calendar for the Blue Jackets, who are in the midst of a five-game road trip. Welcome to the Blue Jackets Monday Mailbag. Bob McElligott here with you, taking your questions, your comments, whatever it is you want to send me or talk to me about. Very easy to do. If you go to X, formerly Twitter, you can send your questions to me at Bobby Mac Sports. You can also, if you're with me live on X Spaces right now, request to be a speaker there, and I will just bring you up and you can ask your question to me, and it is just that simple to get it done. Really, really is. So that's what we're looking at here today. The Blue Jackets, in the midst of this five-game road trip, as I've said, they've played three of the five games, and they haven't won any of the three. The best chance they had to win a game was last Tuesday, and that was in Detroit when the Blue Jackets had a one-goal lead with 19 seconds left in regulation, but they lost a face-off in their own end, and they gave up a goal with 13 seconds left and then ended up losing the game in overtime. So that was a tough one to take. And then you move on to Colorado and Vegas, and you know that those games, just when you look at them on the schedule and look at the types of teams that you're playing and what's going on there, you know it is going to be difficult. And it was difficult. It was very difficult losing in Vegas. 6-1 the final score there, and then you go into Vegas, or losing in Colorado, I should say, 6-1. Then you go into Vegas the next day, and you know you're playing a good game. To be honest with you, I hesitated there because in both of those games, if it was a 20-minute game, that would have been fantastic because the Blue Jackets played really well in the first period of both games, at Colorado, at Vegas. But things started to break apart in the second period, and they really started to fall apart because of much of the same reason. And the reason is those two teams are going to the playoffs. And Colorado has visions of getting back to the Stanley Cup final. And so does Vegas. And they're not just visions. It's not like it's this pie in the sky thing, right? I mean, they're already in playoff positions. They're trying to better their playoff positions. But when you look at their rosters, oh, my goodness. In Vegas, they don't even have the guys that are going to be major factors in their lineup right now. But yet, it's a really dangerous roster, quite honestly. So, those games look like they could be bad just when you look at it at any point during the year. And then after the first period of both those games, you're like, all right, okay, this is pretty good. Even the Vegas game. After two periods, and the Blue Jackets had been completely dominated in the second period of the game. I mean, they have three shots on goal. They just couldn't get anything going at all. And despite all of that, it's a 2-1 game going into the third period. They wind up losing it 4-2. Got a late goal to make it look, you know, a little bit closer than it was, but they had chances. They had a chance in that game. They were just, you know, one Vegas mistake away from getting it back to a tie. Didn't happen, but they were right in it. The reason they were in that game was Daniil Tarasov. Maybe the best game he's played since he's been a member of the Blue Jackets, quite honestly. I mean, he was terrific, absolutely outstanding. It's not that Elvis Merzlikins was not good the night before. It was just the fact of the level of the competition outmatched that what the Blue Jackets could bring to the table. You know, it's a fact. Now, after the Vegas game, you know, Boone Jenner was, you know, not happy. He was pretty upset. Erik Branson was pretty upset. Didn't like the way that the team played. Boone said, "We quit playing after the first period." Well, I don't 100% think they quit playing. I just think that Vegas turned it up and they didn't have anything to match it. Now, Boone could have been talking about himself personally and his line mates, because that top line got out of that Vegas game and had zero shots on goal, which is amazing. Zero. It's hard to do for that group to keep them off the sheet like that. But that did happen in that game. So, you know, you can break it down however you want. I mean, facts are facts when you look at guys that are out of the lineup. But I wonder, even with some of those guys in the lineup, how much different would it be against teams like that? Because those teams, and I'm talking about Colorado and Vegas, those are teams on a mission. Detroit was a desperate team. No, Detroit has just been free-falling for the last couple of weeks. So they were desperate. They were in a situation where they're trying to hang on to the final wild card spot when they played the Blue Jackets. They're playing the last place team in the Eastern Conference. They've got to get desperate. They've got to win a game there. And they had the Islanders coming up next, who is the team they're battling for that final playoff spot. So that was imperative for them to come back in that game last Tuesday. And they did. But the other two, they're just cut out of a different mold. I think we can agree that the West is pretty impressive. When you look at the Western Conference and the teams that are in the Western Conference that are going to the playoffs, it's pretty impressive. Just look in that Central Division where Colorado is battling to get to the top and stay at the top, and they're battling against Winnipeg and Dallas. I mean, look at that right there. And then another team in the Central that's in a wild card spot, and they're making noise, the Nashville Predators. You get out in the Pacific, you've got Edmonton and Vancouver. Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like either of those two teams better than the teams I just mentioned in the Central, right? I just don't. And what about Los Angeles? I mean, where are they going to be able to hold on to their spot? Vegas is pushing to try to get into that top three. So the West is pretty darn strong. And you look at the East in comparison, you know, the Rangers have played well, the Panthers have played well, the Hurricanes have played well, but the teams in the West just seem like they're so big, so strong, and that they could be a handful for whatever comes out of the East. But that is so far down the line, it doesn't matter right now. But they're impressive. That Colorado team, you know, when you talk about them, and I did talk about them. I talked with Pascal Vincent before the game in Vegas, and I told him about the conversation I had with Jack Johnson, the former Blue Jacket, on the morning of the game against Colorado. We were in the dressing room and, you know, just catching up with Jack. It's good to see Jack. He's all smiles and, you know, happy to see us, happy to talk. And Jody Shelley said to him, he goes, "You guys, even in your pregame skate out there in the morning, you are very businesslike. There's no nonsense. You're not messing around. It is just go out there and get your work in." And Jack said, "Yeah, we get accused of that, of being a team that doesn't have a lot of fun." He said, "Guys come in here from the outside and they go through practice and they go through morning skates, and some of them have said, well, you guys don't have a lot of fun around here." And Jack said, "You know what's fun? Winning games. That's what's fun." And when I was talking with Pascal Vincent and telling him of that conversation, he came back to me and he said, "As you tell me all of that, all I can hear is Nathan MacKinnon, Nathan MacKinnon, Nathan MacKinnon." And that guy, what a beast. What an absolute beast. And as Pascal said, he's from Nova Scotia. He has been spending his life watching Sidney Crosby. They're good buddies, best friends. And he has modeled himself after Sidney Crosby in the competitive ranks and the level of compete that he brings to the ice day in and day out. There was a point in that game where he took a shot on Elvis Merzlikins. At this time, he had no points, and he has scored at least 1 point in every home game of the year for the Colorado Avalanche. So he had no points in the game, and he comes into the right-wing circle, and he takes a shot on Elvis, and it's a good shot. And Elvis makes a really good save on it. And I believe Elvis held the puck, and there was going to be a faceoff. And MacKinnon was so mad that he didn't score that goal. Not mad at Elvis, not mad at his teammates, mad at himself. As he looked at that and he saw the opening, he thought he should have had the goal. And he didn't get the job done. He was so mad. And that's just the level of competitiveness that oozes out of that guy. And then if you're his teammate, you've got to respect it, and you've got to raise your level and try to get there. I don't think anybody else on that team does. I don't know if it's possible for anybody to get there, but that's where the entire team is raised, by the expectations of one individual. So he's pretty special. And to have that kind of a player, and again, there are great players around him. I mean, Mikko Rantanen had two goals in that game. Cale Makar had a goal, and he's ridiculously good from the blue line. It's not just one guy on that team in particular. It's a whole collection of guys. But that one guy sets the tone. That one guy puts out the expectations. And then everybody around has to meet those expectations. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, you have to be a special player to do that. And, you know, the Blue Jackets, look, let's just be honest, they don't have that kind of a player with that kind of skill and that kind of passion and that kind of drive right now. They just don't. They have some very good and very talented players. But the Nathan MacKinnon is a package of a bunch of stuff, all that is good. And that's going to give them a great chance to get back to win another Stanley Cup. You know, in Vegas, you go into Vegas and they're playing without Alex Pietrangelo, playing without Mark Stone. You know, they got, at the trade deadline, they got Tomas Hertl from the San Jose Sharks. He's still not recovered from an injury. As a matter of fact, they just had to put him on long-term IR so they could create some cap space to call somebody up. So they've got, you know, a lot of their best players weren't even in the lineup. But that doesn't matter because of the guys that are in the lineup. Pietrangelo's out, but yet they picked up Noah Hanifin from the Calgary Flames, a bona fide top defenseman. So you're missing Pietrangelo, but you've got Hanifin. Well, that's a heck of a lot easier to take than you're missing Pietrangelo and you've got to bring up somebody from the American Hockey League. Night and day difference. Night and day difference. So a couple of teams that are very deep, and they played like Stanley Cup champions, quite frankly. Both of them did over the weekend. And now you've got the Arizona Coyotes coming up on the schedule tomorrow night. And when you look at the remainder of the road trip, Coyotes tomorrow in Pittsburgh on Thursday, those are two winnable games, you know, especially the one against the Coyotes. They've struggled. They started off well this year. Then they've gone through spurts, and they're not a bad team. I mean, they can play well. I just talked to somebody yesterday. Actually, I went to the last spring training game for both the Reds and the Guardians yesterday. And Jim Rosenhaus, he does radio for the Cleveland Guardians, and I've known Jim for 30 years. We worked together in the minor leagues and, you know, came up together in two different leagues, and then he went to Cleveland, and I eventually came to Columbus. So I was talking to Jim yesterday, and he said that he had gone to the Coyotes game against New Jersey recently. And he said, man, I don't know why that Arizona team doesn't win more. They're fast. They really skate well. So, you know, this is a league where any team can win on any given night. So don't take anything for granted that you're playing against the Arizona Coyotes, because it's not going to be easy. And it's going to be one of those games that if you don't do what you're supposed to do, there could be problems for you. What else do I have for you before I go to your questions? And again, you can either send your question to me via X, which used to be Twitter. You can do that by finding me at Bobby Mac Sports and just type out your question and send it to me. Or if you're with me live on X Spaces, you can ask your question, which we'll do here in just a minute. But Trey Fix-Wolanski yesterday was sent back to the Cleveland Monsters. He goes back there after this time around. I felt he got more of an opportunity than he did in previous call-ups. And did he do enough with that opportunity? I don't know. I don't know. You know, Trey is one of those guys. We've talked about this so many times. In the American Hockey League, he is a top point getter. There's no doubt about it. He has been terrific for the Cleveland Monsters. And he's come up here in at different times where he's been put on the fourth line and he's expected to play with energy, and they're not worried about his scoring. They just want him to go out there and hit and be an energy guy. And that's not what he is in Cleveland, but he has to adjust and be that up here. But this time around, he got more of a chance to be that scorer, and he just wasn't able to deliver it, or whatever game he was playing, he wasn't able to deliver enough to get the opportunity to stay here. So Fix Wolanski goes back down. James Malatesta has been called up to the National Hockey League for the first time in his career. And Malatesta was in Vegas. He was a healthy scratch there. I would expect he draws in tomorrow night. Well, he's got to, right? There's only 12 forwards on this team right now. So he'll draw in against the Coyotes tomorrow. Now, Malatesta, this is a different story. When I'm talking about guys that they get called up and they are points guys in the American League, and now they're expected to be energy guys up here. James Malatesta is an energy guy. No matter where he goes, he's going to be an energy guy. So he'll get the opportunity to showcase that in the NHL for the first time tomorrow night. So that's what's going on with the Blue Jackets. Let me find out what is going on with you. Pretty simple to do. Again, if you're with me live on X Spaces, you can just request to come on and be a speaker, and we'll talk. Donald has requested to do that. So, Donald, let's talk. How are you?
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, so, I mean, I heard you're talking about, you know, the character of Nathan MacKinnon and how we don't have, you know, the skill plus the leadership and that work ethic and all that. And, you know, our best guy in that department is Boone Jenner, of course, our beloved captain. And there's been some talk about his playing time lately. I'm sure you've heard those complaints as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess I'm just curious what your take is on that. I mean, we've got Voronkov and Cole Sillinger that are kind of streaky at times. They'll have really good runs and then kind of taper off. And just for the sake of Boone's back and his longevity, and we've, like, I think a lot of us want him around, you know, in 3 years when we're trying to make a run. So what are your thoughts on kind of balancing that, especially where we are with the season?
All right, well, let me ask you this. And no, the team's not going to the playoffs. They've been mathematically eliminated, so that's absolutely for sure. Okay, but we've known that for a long time. But I'm going to ask you this, Donald, and it's a very simple question. No matter where this team is in the standings right now, do you want to win or do you want to lose?
Oh, I'm all about winning. I'm not.
Well, then Boone Jenner's got to play. Then Boone Jenner has to play. It's very simple. You know, especially right now, it's easy to say, why don't you play the kids? Okay, well, there's 7 kids here from Cleveland, I believe, right? And you're playing against the Avalanche and the Golden Knights. And it was very obvious. It was apparent, the differential in skill between the two teams when it came down to it. I don't know. This whole Boone Jenner roll back his minutes things, I'm going to be honest with you. This is how I feel. This is totally my opinion and how I feel. I'm stuck on it because I understand what you're saying. You don't want him to get hurt. But on the same token, I'm paying you to play. You're my best player. You're my leader. You're the only guy I can rely on every single solitary shift. And by the way, if I'm a coach who has no idea what his future is because he has no idea who his next boss is going to be, I'm trying to win as much as I can win right now, especially with a subpar team that is lacking talent when you compare it to the teams it's going up against. I am doing everything I can to win those games because I've got to be in the best light when I get a new boss. And that guy, Boone Jenner, is the one guy I can count on day in and day out, shift in and shift out. This whole thing about, well, what if he gets hurt and then we don't have him? Okay, so then what are we talking about? So are we talking about should we just trade him in the summer so you don't have to worry about that because his value is as high as it will ever be and you can send him to a team that thinks they can win a Stanley Cup with him and you can get a big return and then you can take that off the table? You know, these are the things that go through my head and it drives me crazy because I am not – just my mentality is not sit down because I'm afraid you might get hurt. And he could. He could. It's a true story that he could. But if you're not playing Boone Jenner 24 minutes a night, I don't think you have much chance of winning with this group right now at all. And I'm so sick of losing. This last year has rolled into this year, and, you know, there's no Fantillis and Bedards at the top this year, so I'm sick of losing. And so I don't want to hear about Boone Jenner might get hurt, pull him back. Why aren't we playing this guy? Why aren't we playing that guy? I'll tell you why you're not playing them, because they're not good enough. They're not playing well enough. They're not consistent enough. They're not getting the job done enough. And that's why. I'm not yelling at you, by the way. I hope you know that.
I know. Yeah, and I agree a lot with what you're saying, but I do think that maybe there's a possible middle ground between, you know, I just giving the other kids opportunities. I know they're not doing the job, and that's why they're not on the ice as much, and he's our old reliable guy, especially in the faceoff. I just wonder if there's a middle ground to where we bump him down just to the second line instead of the first line and bring up Cole, or, you know what I mean? Just some minor shuffling, just, and I'm not the kind of guy that wants to handle him with kid gloves, but I just think knocking 2 minutes off his ice time will add up over time.
He's not going to let you. he's not going to let you. And, you know, when you talk about moving him down to this line and that, it made me think, remember how much people were complaining early in the season that the lines were never the same? They were being changed every game.
Sure.
These lines, I'll tell you, in the last four games, I would have liked to have seen something done with the lines during the games and quit keeping them the same. So it's gone from one extreme to another extreme with that. So you're talking about moving them around. they've been pretty rigid right now with what's going on. But, I mean, Boone Jenner, when Boone feels healthy, he's not going to let you put him on the bench. And it's a, I guess it's a catch-22, but, you know, I don't know. It's like when you tell players, when you play not to get hurt, you end up getting hurt anyway. Boone doesn't, he's not thinking about any of that. He's just playing hockey. And as long as he's, as long as he's fine, and he is, I know there are varying opinions on it, but that one drives me nuts. It just drives me nuts, Donald. I'm not going to lie to you, because I can't fathom taking the one guy that I can always count on and telling him no. You know, if you're the Colorado Avalanche, yeah, then you can do it. If you're the Vegas Golden Knights, sure, you can do it. If you're the Columbus Blue Jackets, I mean, geez. And what, you know, they're like, well, Voronkov is this and that. First of all, Voronkov, no offense. What do you expect him to do on a line with Trey Fiksz-Wilanski and Mikhail Puthia? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm just being open and honest with you. I think that guy's drawn a bad card right now. You know, he was with Marchenko and Chinnikov, and they had things happening. He's been with some other guys. They've had things happening. Now he's put on a line with two minor leaguers, and nothing's happening. Are we surprised? No.
Right.
So somebody might say, well, then put him with Gaudreau. And no, well, that's not it either. There's some of the guys that are out now also makes it a hard thing to mix and match and put people in the right spots too. So it's, but
for anyway. Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, it is. Well, I understand what you're saying. I do want you to know that I understand your concern and I understand what you're saying. I just can't. My personal competitiveness, I can't see sitting my best player if he's healthy and worrying about what might happen. I mean, if we lived our lives worrying about what might happen, and some people do this, and guess what? They suck. They're non-productive because all they're doing is worrying about what might happen and not what is going on and is happening. So that being said, something will happen these next two games, and next week you'll call me and say, what an idiot you are. You should have listened to me.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the coach, because it's a hard decision to make sure that they are doing what's right for now to be competitive, all as well as being ready for next year. You know, so it is what it is.
That actually, that you probably could just put that on a T-shirt right now. Is what it is, right? Thank you, Donald. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Take care.
Yeah, it is. That one is such a catch-22. And I know I get fired up about it, but I just, I don't know. I feel like you take away so much chance to win. And when you talk about players developing, they develop in a more positive atmosphere, personally and group-wise, right? So you're going to put a guy out there for more minutes and then he's going to have more struggles. Is that helping to develop him the way he needs to? Not 100% sure. All right, let me go to X here. And Max Lincolns. Let's get that straight. It's not Merzlikens. It's Max Lincolns. Here's the question. Do you believe that Adam Fantilli could play at least one game before the end of the season? I'll start with this part. I don't think he's going to. If he's not really skating by now, there's 11 games left. I don't think he would play one game. I think the only way he would come back and play is if he could play a couple. And at this point, I don't even know if that's worth considering. I don't know if it's even possible, because I don't know where he is in his recovery status. But it is looking to me like it's over for Adam Fantilli. And what a disappointment for him and for the Blue Jackets that he takes a freak injury, gets cut on a laceration on the calf, and just isn't able to come back and get any games in. Like I said, maybe he still does. Maybe I'm wrong, but the way I see it right now, I don't see him playing the rest of the year. I see him having to work out in the summer and skate in the summer and be ready to be top-notch when training camp comes next season. So I don't see it. Max Lincolns also says, what playoff matchup would be the most interesting and a matchup that would be the most exciting? Most interesting and most exciting. Well, I think there's a number of them. Let me just look at it, pull up the standings right here. Let's see how it is right now, today. In the East, Metropolitan, you have the Rangers, then Carolina and Philadelphia, although Carolina is just 1 point out of first place, so could change there. Atlantic, you've got Florida and Boston tied. Florida is in first by the tiebreaker. Toronto is in third. Then your wild card teams right now, this is amazing to me. It really is. The Tampa Bay Lightning, and they're pretty solid. They're going to get there. Washington is in the second wild card spot right now. Washington, 1 point ahead of the Red Wings, 4 points ahead of the Islanders. Were the Washington Capitals not left for dead months ago? Weren't they? Evgeny Kuznetsov goes into the player assistance program. When he comes out, they send him to the American Hockey League. Then they trade him to Carolina. Anthony Mantha, they deal to the Vegas Golden Knights. They were selling pieces off, right? Nicholas Backstrom has to basically retire and can't play anymore. They were left for dead last I checked, the Washington Capitals. But yet here they are. Now, so if the playoffs were to start today, I know people that hate that phrase. They hate it. But I can't. All I can tell you is you're asking about matchups. I can only tell you about today. So it'd be the Rangers and the Capitals. The Rangers would win that. I don't think that would be much drama. Carolina and Philly. Philly's had such a surprising season, but I don't see that being very exciting. Florida, Tampa, that would be exciting. Those are always exciting. And I would bet that neither one of those teams wants to see each other in the first round. That's just my bet. Boston, Toronto, that would be a great one. Those are always great. So if you look at those series in the East, Florida, Tampa, Boston, Toronto, I love both of those as far as excitement and good matchups. Now in the West, Central, you've got Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg. This changes every day where these three are in the standings. In the Pacific, you have Vancouver, Edmonton, LA. Then you've got Nashville and Vegas are in the wild card spot. So let's see if it would start today. Vancouver with 98 points. That's more than Colorado. They would get the second wild card, right? And that would be Vegas. And I don't care what the point total is there. That would be tough for Vancouver, I just think. And then you would have, then Colorado would get Nashville. I swear to you, people are not going to want Nashville in the first round. I'm telling you. Just telling you. I mean, they have been rolling. They are ridiculous right now. Peaking at the right time. So that would be a good series. That would be a good one. That would leave you Dallas and Winnipeg. That'd be pretty good. And Edmonton, LA, who know each other very well. So I like whoever's playing Nashville. I like that one. And I like those ones in the East that I was telling you about. That's what I think. That's what I like. As I look at it, and again, it's going to change a million times, 8 million times, 6 million times between now and then, maybe. I don't know. But looking at it today, That's what I see. That's what I like. So we'll see if any of that shakes out when it's all said and done on the year. What else do I have here? Marcus says, do you feel a new general manager will make big moves like trading Jenner, Line A, and Werenski, or buyouts to construct their team? I think it's both, to be honest. I think it's buyouts and trading. Anyway, Marcus says, I think it's time to make some dramatic changes to the core and build a new core around the young guys, similar to what Barry Trotz did in Nashville. And then he says, sorry, not Trotz, although he did change up his team, but Briere reconstructed his team with Philly. I shouldn't type up a question while I'm working. Well, Trotz did too, though. I mean, in all fairness, what he brought in was, he did some things. He bought out Matt Duchene. And by the way, and Matt Duchene's doing fine in Dallas, but he determined that Matt Duchene was not one of those players that was going to take his team where it needed to go. Bought him out. Cost him a lot of money. He ate a lot of money. Ryan O'Reilly came in. Character guy. Former Stanley Cup winner. That made a big difference. So Barry Trotz, he did make over his roster as well. Make no mistake about it. And the guy was ready to trade his goalie. Remember just weeks before the trade deadline when the name UC Saros was out there? Because they have a young kid in the American Hockey League that's been lights out, and they were ready to make the swap. And then all of a sudden, the Predators caught fire, and then they pumped the brakes on that. That's something that could happen in the summer. I could see that in the summer. I think UC Saros' name will be back out there in the summertime. I think if it is out there, I don't know. How good do you feel about your goaltending that you have? Because that guy's a pretty good goalie. You know, Saros, Tarasov, I don't know if you can afford it, the combo there, but you'd have the big tall guy and a little short guy, and they both play lights out. That wouldn't be bad. Anyway, so Trotz did remake his roster. And Daniel Briere, he did, but he's still in the process of it. Look, Philadelphia has overachieved, let's be honest, right? And can you believe that they continue to achieve without Carter Hart in net? Seriously, if you lost three quarters of the way through the season, you're having playing beyond what is supposed to be your capabilities as a team type of season. And I said to you, oh, I'm going to take your starting goalie, and he may not play for you the rest of the year. Heck, he may not play for you ever again. Good luck. Would you be happy about that? No, absolutely not. You'd be devastated. But he did, or they did. He's gone. That's my point. He's gone, and yet they're continuing to do well because they had a second goalie that was ready to go in Arison. He's done a good job. So he's redone his roster, but he's not done redoing his roster. He's got a ways to go on that. So to get back to the original question, do you feel a new GM will make big moves? I think it's very possible. I think, and whether it's trades or buyouts, combination of the two, I think there are some people that you'll look to move if you can, and if you can't, you're going to have to consider buying them out. Just a fact of life, I think. You're going to have to consider it. So I wouldn't be surprised to see either one of those things when it's all said and done. I wouldn't be surprised to see buyouts. I wouldn't be surprised to see a shakeup and see a big name or two that moves on. Wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. And again, I don't know because I don't even know who the heck the person's going to be. So we will we'll have to hold our collective breaths here for another couple of weeks maybe and wait to see who the person is and then find out what the what direction they want to go. Find out what their plan is, and then it'll be easier to answer. Chris, live on X Spaces, is up next to be on this Blue Jackets Monday mailbag. So, Chris, if you unmute, you can come on and ask your question. But you have to unmute, because if you don't control that, I can't control it for you. I can't make you speak. You've got to be able to unmute yourself and make yourself speak. So I'm waiting for you to do that. I'll wait for a short time more, and then if we don't get it done, we'll move on. And he didn't get it done, so we're going to move on. And I know this person's going to be there because he always is. Oh, Chris is requested. Chris, hold on. We'll try it again. But right now, Lester is up on the Monday Mailbag. Hi, Lester.
Hello there. You know, when I first started listening to you 5 years ago, I heard you say one time you were talking about Thomas Greiss, who played for the Islanders at the time.
Yep.
And the Blue Jackets really had fits with him one particular year. We had a year against the Islanders. We couldn't score against him. It was crazy. And you made the comment, I'll never forget you saying that you thought Greiss was more a product of Barry Trotz's system than he was actually good. Now, I'm not kind of throwing that in your face, but what I'm saying is you're talking about Philadelphia not having Carter Hart. And I look at, well, who is the coach? And I think back to 5 years ago or 4 years ago, whenever it was, and goalies here in Columbus like Korpisalo and Merzlikens had their best success when John Tortorella was behind the bench, and I felt they were the benefactors of his system because since he left, neither one of them has ever been quite to that level.
You're right. And I think I was right about Thomas Greiss, although he did go on and play for other teams, not coached by Barry Trotz, and still seemed to stick it to the Blue Jackets every time he played against them. So maybe he just learned so much under Barry Trotz. But no, you're absolutely right, Lester. I mean, the system that is played, and yeah, with Torts, we had a front row seat to watch it. Yeah, there's no question about it. If you're playing the team defensive system you're supposed to, you're going to make your goaltender better. But still, it doesn't take away from the fact that you lose a starting goalie. That's a big deal. I mean, I don't care who the other guy is. It's a big deal. Now, I know they had a – was it yesterday? They had a problem in goal, and Torts was asked about the goaltending, and he just walked away from the press conference after the game. So it doesn't work all the time for him. But, yeah, his system makes his goalies better. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Question, because Brendan Gaunce is no longer an emergency recall, do you think there's a possibility we've seen the last of Sean Corrali this year?
I think so, yeah. I don't know that because he's not even on the trip, but I think it's possible. And it's too bad because there's another guy that he's a lead by example guy and he's a good veteran voice in the room. And I don't have a problem with the way Gaunce has been playing. I think he's been fine, but there's a lot of guys that have been fine. Sean brings those intangibles that you've now lost for maybe the rest of the season. I don't know 100%, Lester, but I could see that because when he starts out going week to week is never good, right? I mean, week to week means it could be 1 week, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. So I guess we'll have to wait and see when we get back home.
Yeah. You talk about how good Nathan MacKinnon is, and boy, he was impressive the other night. But, you know, last year when I was listening to the scouts out of Canada and they're talking about the draft prospects from last year's draft, I constantly heard Adam Fantilli being compared to Nathan MacKinnon. Now, if that actually happens, that gives me a lot of hope.
When we were in Colorado, I was talking with their broadcasters, and somebody asked me, is Adam Fantilli the real deal? And my answer was, I don't know. And that's not a knock on Adam. We just haven't seen enough of him. And now we haven't seen him since January. So you need to go through the process to really be able to tell. But I will say this. He does not like to lose. And that's obvious. And he was quiet about it when he was playing this year because he's a 19-year-old rookie, and what are you going to say, right? But right. I think that element is there with him. I think that, you know, he's got to cultivate it the right way, right? Because you just can't, if things aren't going well for you and the team, you can't just be mad about it all the time because you hate it. You've got to change it, and you've got to get the other people around you to want to change it as much as you want to change it, and then that's how that whole process begins. But I see the potential there, but it's such a small sample size, Lester, and on a team that right now is not good, so it's hard to tell. But again, look when Nathan MacKinnon came back in. The Avalanche wasn't good. And right. That's why they got him. So it took him time to do what he has done. But I'm telling you, I am so impressed. In that game, just watching that guy, it just stood out so much. His whole, you know, we are not going to lose, and you're not going to back off. And if you do, I'm going to be in your face. That's just the way it looks that way on the ice from the press box, the way he plays it. And look, a lot of people hate Sidney Crosby, but a lot of people hate him because he's really good and he's really competitive, and he still is at 36 years of age, and he's the same type of guy. And when your best friend is like that, and he's won cups, and now you're trying to match the success that he has had, well, obviously you're going to be that way, right? That's what he's learned from. So, and here's the thing. Like when I said earlier, the Blue Jackets don't have a player like that. That's not a knock on the Blue Jackets organization. Players like that are super special. They don't come along every year in the draft. I mean, they come along once in a while. And if Adam Fantilli happens to be one of those once in a while guys, that's going to be great for this team in the future.
Well, if he is indeed, then I would think the new general manager is going to take a perspective where he says, I've got to kind of build my team around this guy and find players that are suitable to his game when he makes changes. Doesn't that make sense?
Yes, that makes complete sense. And I would be surprised if that's not the case. I mean, when you look at this roster right now, when Adam Fantilli is healthy, we can make the argument very easily that he's the best player on this team. No offense, Johnny Gaudreau. But because we're talking about not just the right now, we're talking about 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. And that is where this next general manager is going to have to look at that. They're not going to come in here and fix everything in 4 months before next season starts. It's just not going to happen. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't have something happen like the Flyers have going on right now, where you make some changes and then you play really well and maybe you overachieve and then you believe in yourself and you wind up in a playoff spot. That's possible, but is it likely? I don't know. I think it's going to take him some time, but Adam Fantilli could easily, if I was coming in as general manager, I would look at him as my centerpiece, and you're absolutely right. That's the guy that I'm going to build around. I look at his talent, see where he was drafted, what he's done in the past, what I project that he can do in the future, and he's going to be my guy right now.
Yeah, at some time progress has to be made because this is the fourth straight year that the Blue Jackets are going to be drafting in the top six, and you can't say that about any other team.
Right, and what you said too was key, getting players to play with him. And not just him, but getting players to play together. We've beat this horse to death over the course of the season. Do you have a roster or do you have a team? I think you still have a roster. You need to build it into a team. And how do you do that? You find the pieces that are going to interlock and are going to work together. The Johnny Gaudreau, Patrick Laine doesn't work. Okay. Well, then what is going to work? You know, now I've got two guys under big money and fairly long, one on a long-term contract, the other one on a medium-term contract here, and I've got to figure it out. So if they can't play together, I've got to do one of two things. I've got to find two guys that can play with them, or I've got to move one of them and get some pieces that I can put in and be able to keep with the other one. You know, that's where we're at right now with this.
Yeah. One last thing I want to squeeze in here, a thought on Alexander Nylander and what he has done thus far. I know he had kind of a quiet week this week. They did play a much tougher schedule, and the lines have been a bit jumbled and so on and so forth. But when they first made the trade for him and I saw what the trade was, I was a little surprised in the sense that I think Bemstrom had run through waivers once or twice and could have been claimed and was not. So the sixth-round draft pick for him kind of made sense to me. But then when Nylander was thrown in on the trade, my perception of it was maybe Pittsburgh trying to get rid of a little bit of salary here and there so they could maybe make some improvements to their team to try and make a playoff run. And I didn't think anything more of it beyond that. But to this point, to me, he has been found money.
Yeah, he has been.
Yeah, that's how I would.
And I think from the Blue Jackets' perspective, I think you bring him in, and because right now, look, you have no Kent Johnson. You have some you're losing Roslovic. You have no Kent Johnson. You know you're going to have some opportunities to play him on the wing, right? So this is like right. This is like a free test drive. You get this guy and you put him in and you see what he brings. And he's brought a lot. So to his credit, he could have been a guy that came in here and had, I think he's a RFA at the end of the year. You could let him walk. Now he is in a discussion because of the way that he has played, right? But again, right. The new general manager is going to have to come in and look at all these pieces and look at, you know, the young guys that are here, the ones that are coming, and now look at Alex and say, okay, like is he realistically going to be on a line with Boone Jenner and Johnny Gaudreau next year? Probably not. When Fantilli gets back, where is he going to be? Is he going to be with Gaudreau? Where's Jenner going to be? Where, you know, a lot of mixing and matching things there. But, yes, he has put himself into the discussion. I think when he came in here, it was kind of like, hey, kid, great to have you. Don't really have a lot of plans for you. Let's see what you can do. And he's done a lot. So kudos to him for that. And, yeah, he was quiet this weekend, but he was certainly not alone on a list of quiet people this weekend.
Well, I think for him too, he realizes at this stage in his career, I mean, he's been around now for 8 years, that this is opportunity presenting itself, and he absolutely has to seize the day with it. He can't let this get away.
He's on his fourth team. I mean, you only get X amount of chances, right?
Yeah, well, I think everybody in their lifetime has that day where an opportunity presents itself. And how the rest of your life plays out depends on whether or not you seize that opportunity. And you got to do it because it might be the only one, real one you ever really get. You can't just sit there and say, well, I'll wait for what comes down the road. You know, you got to shoot the ducks while they're flying.
Right. And obviously he realizes that. And, you know, he comes from a family where his dad played in the NHL and, you know, played for a number of different teams. And his brother's a star in Toronto. So he gets it. And he knows where he is. And, you know, you're always waiting for that opportunity, and Pittsburgh never really gave it to him. They gave it to him in small spurts, and here he's gotten a chance to earn some trust and do some good things. So good for him.
Yeah. I'm going to finish with this thought. It's a story about a guy who seized his opportunity. It goes back to baseball. As you know, I like the Toronto Blue Jays, and back in 1978, their two super scouts, Al Lamaki and Bobby Maddock, went to a college baseball game between Eastern Illinois and Southern Illinois. And this particular, they were there to look at a guy named Jeff Gossett, who was a middle infielder for Eastern Illinois. He went on to play in the NFL for several teams as a punter, most notably the Browns and Raiders. And they were looking at him, and that particular day, Eastern Illinois was blowing out Southern Illinois 27-2 in the seventh inning. So the coach for Southern Illinois asked his fourth outfielder, who hardly ever played, if he'd go in and pitch the last three innings of the game just to save the bullpen. This guy never pitched before, so he agreed to do it. He goes out there, he gets all nine batters out, and at the end of the game, he's getting on the team bus to go back to Southern Illinois, and Lamakia and Maddock approach him and said, hey, we liked what we saw. If we draft you, will you sign with us? Well, he thought it was his teammates playing a joke, so he said, yeah, sure. Well, five weeks later, they did draft him. The guy's name was Dave Steeb. And he had never pitched before. They turned him into a pitcher. The next year, he was in the majors. He won 8 games. He went on to win 176 games, start 3 All-Star games, threw a no-hitter, took several no-hitters into the ninth inning, even a couple of perfect games. And none of it happens if he doesn't go in there and mop up those 3 innings. And kudos to those two scouts who didn't go home when the game got out of hand and Gossett got pulled from the game. In fact, Gossett wound up getting drafted right after Steeb by the Mets, and the Mets promptly told him, yeah, we want to make you a pitcher. And he said, no way, and quit, and that's when he wound up in the NFL. But the whole point of the story is that opportunity was there, and when it's there, you got to seize the day, man.
Absolutely, you do. I got a chance to meet Bobby Maddock, and he's a beautiful person, I'll tell you that right now. What's amazing is those guys did all of that without analytics. Can you believe it?
Oh, yeah. Well, they just went on the eye test. I sometimes think analytics is a lot of bunk. I'm sorry, but I do.
I mean, I've said this always in both baseball and now in hockey. It's there's a middle ground. I mean, you can use it. You're basically, like to me, I use it to back up what I'm seeing, right? I think I'm seeing that. Is that right? Let me look over. Yeah, the numbers support that. So some people get too much into it, in my opinion, and other people are probably too not into it. I don't know. There's a middle ground there, no doubt about that. That was like, there's a story about Jorge Posada who hadn't really caught in his life, and a catcher got injured in the game, and he said he could do it, and he got behind the plate, and there were Yankee scouts there, and the rest is history.
Yep. Absolutely.
Funny how life works, Lester. Good talking to you, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Yep. Have a good one.
All right. Okay. Monday mailbag, March 25th. Blue Jackets, 11 games left on the schedule. Chris, we were trying to get Chris on earlier, and couldn't get Chris on the show. He couldn't unmute and talk to me. Looks like he is this time. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, of course, first time on the show, technical difficulties.
That's
you're
okay.
Cutting in and out the whole time, so go figure.
Yeah, it's probably my fault. Don't worry about it.
No apology needed. Hey, so I actually am a CBJ fan that lives up in the Northwest Ohio area. So typically when the Blue Jackets come to Little Caesars Arena up here in Detroit, it's a much easier drive for me. So needless to say, I do apologize if you answer some of this. I joined about halfway through. But I was at the game against the Red Wings. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on things. I was sitting on the side where the Jackets shot twice. Personally, as a fan, I really thought they were the better team for about 75 to 80% of that game. First period, I think they were the better team simply because Detroit came out not looking good at all, especially given the breakaways that ended up in the back of their own net. But kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that. And secondly, with Columbus, where they're at, I know a lot of times when you are playing much stiffer competition, teams higher in the standings, it's easier to get up for those games. So when teams are in the spot that they are at, where the Jackets are at in the standings, I feel like teams where the Red Wings are at is a good measuring stick, at least from a fan perspective. You know, I think a lot of us going into the season thought that that's where we could be at the end of the season, maybe not necessarily in the playoff picture, but definitely pushing come this time of year. So for me as a fan, I really take a lot out of those games when they're playing teams in those standings. Kind of getting your thoughts on that in particular, and kind of how that ending unfolded. And then I do have a couple things just to piggyback off that, but if you wouldn't mind touch on that for me.
Yeah, well, you're right. They were the better team in that game for much of it, but then they didn't win the game. And Detroit was terrible in the first period. I was surprised how not into it they were in the first period with the situation they were in, you know, trying to get into a playoff spot there. So the Blue Jackets took full advantage of them, and then they regrouped, and then they started playing the desperate hockey. Yeah, and, you know, and Detroit got some breaks in that game, and then it came down to winning faceoffs at the end. And, you know, as good as Boone Jenner has been at winning faceoffs overall this year, it was a situation where they iced the puck two times with a one-goal lead and lost faceoffs, and eventually Patrick Kane made him pay for losing a faceoff. Kind of a fluky faceoff, the last one that they lost, where the puck kind of goes up in the air and to Andrew Kopp, and he gets it to Kane. But you know what? If you can't – and I talked about this with Pascal Vincent when it comes to icing the puck in that situation – like, if you're not very good on faceoffs, maybe you should find a way to get the puck to the red line, or if you're not going to hit the net with that empty net shot from inside your own zone, do something else, because relying on that is, well, in that game it turned out to be not the right thing. And when I asked Pascal, I said, look, it used to be that a coach would go crazy if you shot that puck late in the game like that and you missed the net. And now analytics says that, you know, go ahead, it's fine because you got a better chance of winning the faceoff. When I asked Pascal about that, he said, listen, I use analytics, but all I can tell you with the analytics of that game is what the final score was. So he wasn't a big fan of that. But that one, that's really kind of what it came down to, two icings and two lost faceoffs in your own zone.
Right, yeah. And so secondly, kind of to piggyback off that, you mentioned with Kane, I'm not going to lie, I went up there by myself. My wife was kind of tied up in work and couldn't make the trip up with me. So, of course, I'm sitting next to like 8 or 9 Red Wings fans, you know, in a seat down there and Red Wings fans by myself. So, you know, Patrick Kane comes out on the second line in overtime, which I was pleasantly surprised as a Blue Jackets fan. He wasn't out there to start, I believe, if I'm correct. But once
you're correct.
Yeah. Once we got out there on the second line, both of them looked at me and they said, I bet you're shaking in your boots right now. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't, because I had a feeling that game may end once that puck got onto his stick. So I absolutely second that with you, with him out there in overtime. But I also wanted to get your thoughts too. Like when, at the end of regulation there, when Detroit calls that timeout, I don't know if you've ever been in the coaching realm or maybe picked the minds of the coaches before. What's going through from a defensive perspective, especially after you've been icing the puck, getting your teams back down there and Detroit's taking that timeout? Like what is the strategy there? Cause of course, you know, Detroit's going to come out guns are blazing there. I mean, they've got, 16 seconds left to score the goal, and you know what's going to happen. Of course, it was kind of a fluky rebound off of Tari's pads there, but, I mean, what's kind of the strategy there?
Well, I think the strategy there is catch your breath and win a faceoff. Defensively, I mean, that's kind of where you are. You can talk about, okay, if we win the faceoff, where do we want to get the puck out of the zone? But at that point in time, that's pretty much, look, if you don't win the faceoff, draw up whatever play you want to. If you don't win the faceoff, it doesn't matter, right? So defensively, I think a coach is basically just saying, you know, they're probably giving reminders here. Look, just catch your breath, calm down here. You know, let's just concentrate on winning this faceoff, and then let's move the puck beyond the blue line, whatever. I don't think there's not nearly as much going on there as there is on the other side, which on the other side, too, it's still kind of the same. They're just calling the timeout so those guys can catch their breath and they can keep that same unit out on the ice, right? And there's always that catch 22 where you're like, okay, well, if I call the timeout, then the other team's going to be able to keep their best defenders out there. But you, when you decide it's more important, I have my better offensive players with 30 seconds of a break here, I'm going to take the timeout. So it all comes down to the faceoff. They're talking about winning the faceoff. Now, on the offensive side of it, the Red Wings side of it, you're going, okay, if we do that, now here's the play, we're position these guys here and there and all that. But defensively, I think you're just saying, let's win the faceoff, get the puck out of the zone. That's all you got to do.
Right. Okay. Yeah, great. And I just had one last caveat too. I kind of wanted to get your input as a fan of Columbus. I was absolutely ticked off by this, but I think if I was on the other side as a Red Wings fan, I would have thought that it was the most brilliant play ever on that very last play, not to mention the potential missed call on Gaudreau. That was on the other side of the ice, so I actually did not see that live from where I was sitting. But coming back down the other side when Kane ends up putting that puck in the back of the Columbus net in overtime, not sure if you got a glimpse or not of the little pick there that Moritz Seider threw after he dumped the puck off to Kane. What are your thoughts on that? I watched it back on replay once I got home. I thought it was kind of a brilliant play to where he had enough to not get called for it. But if you go off the definition of interference, I felt that it should have been an interference call. But, of course, in live action, it's tougher to catch. But on the other side, you've only got six guys on the ice, so maybe it's easier to catch. I kind of wanted to get your take on that as well.
Well, it was a brilliant play because he didn't get caught.
Very true. That's a great way to look
at it. I mean, that's the only way to put it. Should it have been a penalty? Yeah, I think it should have been a penalty. Did it get called? No. Therefore, it's a brilliant play because he got away with it. If he doesn't get away with it, totally different discussion, right? And should he have gotten away with it? No. And there were several things in that game. And by the way, I will say this. There were several things that happened in that game on both sides. It wasn't like the Blue Jackets just were getting screwed out of calls their way.
Right.
Detroit had a lot of complaints in that game too.
Yes. So, and I thought we were the beneficiary on some of the ends of those no calls, perhaps. I don't know what your standpoint is on the officiating, whether you can comment on that. But as an overall fan, subjectively, I felt that it may not have been a great officiated game.
No, it wasn't.
No, okay.
It wasn't.
Okay.
And again, look, you get to throughout the course of the year, everybody has bad days. Everybody.
Right.
I got them. There's some days I'm screwing up who's got the puck and this and that. It happens to everybody. Players don't have good days. Coaches don't have good days. And officials don't have good days. But then there are other times you get, like now especially, there's a lot of young guys being run into the league. There's a lot of guys that are doing both the American League and the National Hockey League. And sometimes, you know, you get into a game and it's overwhelming still for you. And and I think some of that happened in that game too. But again, it's human nature. It's easy to complain about it, but it's like I said, both teams were complaining. So that means that you didn't have guys out there just trying to screw one team over. Both teams thought they were bad that day, and we're happy to tell them about it. So it
happens. Yeah, Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think as a fan, aside from the last call that we talked about, I really don't think there's anything specifically that stuck out there until overtime that really maybe had a severe effect on the game. But
yeah, and that's the part that drives you crazy as a fan and as a member of the team too. You can screw up all day long, but don't screw up when it decides the fate of the game, right?
Correct.
And that one absolutely did. That one directly did.
Yeah.
There could have been two calls. There could have been two calls on that last play, and there was zero. And that's why they were incensed.
Right. And so I just have one last thing here, if you do have time, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So I know from a fan perspective, I haven't been to a ton of arenas around the National Hockey League, but those local to the area. And my wife and I have taken trips to see the Jackets on the road before. You know, we've been to the Prudential Center in New Jersey, down in Nashville. We've been up to – I actually had a chance to go to the Joe back when that was around in Detroit, and now Little Caesars. I am extremely impressed as a visiting fan by Little Caesars Arena. I kind of wanted to get your take, and obviously you see more of the behind the scenes. Just kind of get your subjective thoughts on that and see, you know, kind of what the treatment's like for you.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, we used to go to the Joe. I know it was very historic, but as a baseball player said one time when I was working in single-A baseball, we pulled into this stadium, and it said, historic Granger Stadium. And I heard a player in the back of the bus say, how come when something says it's historic, it just means it's a piece of, you know. So anyway.
Right.
Joe Louis was very historic.
Yeah,
at the end. And you walked in, it just had this smell about it when you first walked in that was just like, oh, yeah, we're here. You could have blindfolded me and walked me into the security gate, not told me what city I was in, and I would have known in 10 seconds exactly what building I was in. And then there was the press area was not really a press area. They forgot to build a press box when they built it. So It was just like this long row, and I was at a counter, and people would constantly be walking behind you to get down to the seats further and, you know, bumping into you and stuff like that. Sometimes it was great because sometimes Chris Chelios would come by and you could talk. And,
oh, wow, you know, yeah.
That stuff was cool. But so it was fun to be a part of, but the new building is far more luxurious. And now in the press area, in the old building, there used to just be a garbage bag filled with popcorn, and everybody could take a box and reach in there and get that, which was, I mean, really old school. And the new place has, you know, the M&Ms, the gummy bears, the, you know, so, and I'm, all the stuff I don't need, they have it, and I love it. No, but right. they did a really good job on that building, and it's a palace. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. All right, Bob. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I always look forward to listening to these on my way into work every morning, you know, the following Tuesday and stuff. And finally had a Monday off and was able to hop on. So I appreciate your time and thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad you had the Monday off and you could be a part of it, Chris. Thanks for coming on here today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. I've got to do one more before I leave here. And I've got this on X from Peter Klavan. Two questions. If you were made general manager today, what would be at the top of your priority list? Within reason, no Bean for McDavid trades. No kidding. Come on, Peter. I know that. You're not going to get that. No, my priority would just be what I was talking about with Lester. It'd be roster building. To go through and really evaluate and say, you know, who fits here, who doesn't fit here. And then whoever I deem doesn't fit here, I've got to find a way to move them. And, you know, there are a couple of guys at the top of my list. But I'm not going to go through that because I'm not the GM. But there are some guys that I think would do better somewhere else, and you might be able to get some better pieces in return that are going to work well here. So that would be the first thing for me. I would just be total evaluation and who works and who doesn't work, and let's move the guys that don't work and find some guys that are going to come in and work with the others. And the second question Peter has, who's been the most impressive for you this season and who has been the most disappointing? It's a good one. I haven't thought much about this. I've been impressed with Voronkov. I know he's been quiet as of late, but I've been impressed with him. Chinnikov, too, when he's been healthy. I've been impressed with him and his shot, and, you know, especially after they really found a consistent role for him and let him just get in there and play every day. I've been impressed by him. Most disappointing, I don't know. It's kind of a season where you're disappointed in so many different things because things did not go right and things did not go your way. And I'm going through player after player in my head. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau was disappointing early on. He's back to being more like the player that he is now. There's no doubt about that. I'm disappointed in Patrick Laine. Didn't have the great point totals, and then, you know, unfortunately get some injuries, and now he's in the situation. It's disappointing he's in the situation that he is right now in the player assistance program. That's been disappointing. There's no hiding that. I was disappointed that Kent Johnson didn't follow up as much on the season that he had last year. And I know there were many more expectations on him. This is a guy. Look, we talked about Fantilli. What about Kent Johnson? Let's talk about that for a minute here. Where does he fit in on this team? Does he fit in? And if he does, where does he fit in? And how much are you building around Kent Johnson? And what do you want out of Kent Johnson? I think last year, Kent Johnson had 40 points. I don't know that they held him to a lot of structure last year. I think he was kind of free to go do a lot of different things. And I think this year, they've tried to lock him more into a system and a structure, and that's something he's really battled with. So that was disappointing that he didn't have a follow-up season to what he did last year. And I think and I didn't think about this until right now, that's an area of focus. I think as a general manager, that's one guy that I'm going to key in on, and I'm really going to think about it and really going to talk about it and figure out where he is, where I think he can be, and what it's going to take to make him the player that everyone thinks that he can be in this league. That's a key that we haven't touched on in this entire conversation. Really talented kid, really talented. Is he going to be able to get big enough to really hang and play with the big boys? There's questions there with him, but there's such a wealth of potential. Such a wealth. And I think you got to figure out how to make that work. I really do. So thanks to all of you for being a part of the show today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for participating. It's been great to talk with you once again. We'll do it next Monday. I don't even know where the heck we're at next Monday. I'm telling you, I know you think I just make that up. I know we're in Arizona tomorrow. We're in Pittsburgh on Thursday. We're home against Pittsburgh on Saturday. I know all of that. So I'm just going to cheat sheeted here. Oh, my goodness. This is the last show of March, isn't it? Yes, it is. Next week, we're not going to do a show. We're not going to have one at all. April Fools, because that's the day it is. No, we actually have a home game against the Colorado Avalanche next Monday. So we'll do it on a game day. What the heck? What the heck? That's what we'll do next week. Do it against Colorado Avalanche the next Monday mailbag. Arizona tomorrow night, that game gets underway at 10 o'clock in Columbus. Pre-game coverage starting at 9:30 on the Blue Jackets Radio Network and on Bally Sports. And then back to the Eastern Time Zone on Thursday for a regular 7 o'clock game in Pittsburgh. And pre-game coverage starting at 6:30. I'm ready to get back home. I'm ready to go back to the East. It's been nice out here. It's pretty nice today, I'm not going to lie, here in Arizona. But, kind of drags on after a number of days here. So it'll be nice to get that game in tomorrow night and then get back to the Eastern time zone and see the Penguins for two games in a row before you don't have to see them again for the rest of the year. So as I said, thanks for being a part of today's Monday mailbag. Until tomorrow night at 10 o'clock, I almost said 7 because that's what time it'll be for me. Until tomorrow night at 10 o'clock when the Blue Jackets take on the Arizona Coyotes, I'm Bob McElligott. So long.